And then he kind of then enters sort of a common grounds of relapse disease.
Correct.
And he's gotten several therapies, including lenalidomide, rituximab. Let's kind of lay out the infrastructure of how you approach mantle cell, and then we'll talk about how he sort of fit into that. Right now, when people with mantle cell, I guess, present, it seems like one of the things people think a lot about in mantle cell is the patient younger and in good condition and maybe up for a transplant versus older? How do you make that determination and what usually happens? Another thing I've seen in the upfront setting that's happened, I've seen a lot in the last few years, is the increasing use of rituximab maintenance. And I think at one point he had that. But how do you approach upfront now in the older and younger patient?
So, you know, CHOP with rituximab is still a mainstay in mantle cell for initial therapy. To me, it used to be really, there were no decisions, right? So if patients, an average risk mantle cell patient got CHOP and rituximab, we would let them then observe, and at the point they relapsed, you would be doing salvage and taking them to some sort of transplant. The issue now, which is a great issue to have, is we've got ibrutinib that we are really using. I have many patients now who are relapsing after their auto, right? So they got their CHOP rituximab, they relapsed, they got something else, they got an auto, right? Which at that point was standard management for these patients. And so 5 or 10 years ago, we would have been talking about reinducing them and getting them to allo, right, as their long-term plan. And so now the whole landscape has changed, and we are putting those people on ibrutinib and saying, you know what, we've got this great pill. If it works, this could keep you in remission for a short time. It could keep you in remission for a long time. If you get several years out of this, then maybe we'll have another pill to give you or something else that is less risky, less toxic than taking people to an allo transplant. So these oral drugs have really changed the landscape for us. The thing that is uncomfortable is that, you know, historically, when drugs hit the market, we would have at least 10, 15 years of follow-up data on patients to know, understand long-term toxicity and really know the whole story about a drug. So for these newer drugs that have gotten breakthrough status from the FDA, where they sort of have an expedited approval process, you know, and some of them have been approved on phase 2 data, not even phase 3 randomized data, we don't have those years of follow-up. So even though we've got these great, exciting new drugs, we always have very frank conversations with patients about the fact that we don't know what the long-term toxicities of these drugs are going to be. But as we learn them, we'll share them. But most patients are really very happy to go on them and not have to receive systemic chemotherapy.